Welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stink and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
Well, the Nuggets, in a back-and-forth game, rallied in the fourth quarter, as they are wont to do. And you just kind of assumed they'll make the big plays, right? Instead, Jamal Murray misses a real makeable pull-up jumper. Leaves enough time on the clock for Kyrie Irving to get a last shot opportunity. By the way, if you look at the highlight of it, freeze frame, Irving looked like he stepped out of bounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he first got the ball, it looked like his heel was out of bounds. But be that as it may, he still drove into the lane and threw up a... it's Kyrie Irving. He's a terrific player. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many Kyrie Irving buckets in his career that look like that one. It was kind of a running hope and a prayer, but it went in and beat Michael Malone's team.
I saw Kyrie Irving make a running left-handed hook from the elbow. We've been on both sides of it. You know, we won games at the buzzer, and now we lost the game at the buzzer. Give them credit. Give Kyrie credit. Obviously, there's a lot of things down the stretch that we could have done better.
Biggest thing to Michael Malone, upset about, dominated on the glass, out-rebounded 60-37, including a whopping 22 offensive rebounds, which explains why he was as mad after that game as I've seen him after any game this year, because why? You got beat, in effect, because of a lack of effort. Because that's what rebounding is. Rebounding is effort. Yeah, there's some skill involved, but basically it just comes down to effort. And the effort wasn't there, and he was PO'd about it.
Yeah, to get beat on glass 22, and to give up, how many offensive rebounds did he give up?
22.
22?
22 offensive rebounds.
And they got out-rebounded by 22 as well?
60-37.
Yeah. It's just unacceptable. So, yeah, Michael Malone, you should be ticked off.
Well, I expect a much different Nuggets team coming out tomorrow night at Minnesota, because one thing we've learned about this group, they do seem to react well after bad losses.
Second down.
No bad losses for the Avalanche on this road trip, as they are 3-0 on the trip. Jared Bednar's team picking up an overtime win in Edmonton on Saturday.
But all around, this was their best hockey game of the three, I think. I really like the finish to the van game. And we keep playing like this, we'll win a lot of road games. We'll win a lot of games regardless of where they are, home or road. So it's good to see, because I think it's important that the team feels they can go out on the road and win consistently. And we haven't done that so far through the course of the season until this road trip.
They should have an asterisk win. So it should be 2-0. Asterisk win, right? Because it's an overtime win.
I'm not gonna do this. It's hockey. It's some of the dumbest rules. So I'm not gonna argue.
Good.
I will agree with you that they're dumb.
All right, good.
Trying to figure out the whole standings, and never mind when you start getting down into tiebreakers, and then it becomes, you know, regulation wins versus regulation and overtime wins. I mean, it's just, it's head spinning. But, you know, the fact that you could have a winner and a loser and have a three-point game, meaning
the winner comes
away with two and the loser comes away with one, those three-point games can wreak havoc on the standings down the stretch. But be that as it may, the Avalanche, if you've been following this entire season, winning on the road has been an issue. And whereas... Well, up until this most recent stretch, you know, with the Nuggets, it was always, hey, I don't care who they play, where they play. They can have home court advantage. They cannot have home court advantage. It won't bother me in the least. With the Avs, I couldn't say that up until this road trip. And so the performance on the road in this road trip so far, gives me some hope that this is a team that's starting to develop some road swagger.
Plus, hockey, playoff hockey, home road, there's not a huge discrepancy, right?
No. You will find that over the last several years that the breakdown is almost 50-50, the record of road teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, where the Avs win their cup? In Tampa, after losing at home here with a chance to close it out.
third down.
Russell Wilson, introduced to the folks in Pittsburgh, was asked a few questions about his time here in Denver and chooses to look at his Bronco experiences, but a mere blip.
If I were to look back at it all so far, you know, I've been on the winning side a lot of it. And some people haven't, some people have, you know, and so you look at it and just you don't get so pinpoint on just one moment or one play or two plays or 2 years or whatever it is. You look at the whole grand scope of it all, and I think that when you're painting the picture of what your career looks like in the end, you know, hopefully you're able to paint the beautiful picture that you always imagined, and sometimes the best stuff, there's bumps and bruises along the way.
I love looking over at you out of the corner of my eye whenever a Russell Wilson, I can't tell you how many times over the last 2 years, folks, I've looked over and Mark's eyes are rolling. He's just, I catch him in the midst of an eye roll.
You got to look at the whole, you got to look at the whole picture. I get that, yeah. But what you've put out there the last 2 years has just not been very good. And I don't know how you can just, I don't know, you know, it's the positivity thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can just say, oh, that's just a blip.
No. It's the toxic positivity, and that's the way he chooses to live his life, and he's not the only one out there. I'm sure there's some people that are listening right now that you only want to focus on the positive. And even if something bad happens, you quickly try to find a way to spin it towards the positive. That's how some people live, and that's how some people's outlook is, and that's how Russ's outlook is. Relentlessly positive.
Just a little 11-19 blip.
Yep.
Let's rock.
While making a lot of money doing it.
And one coach getting fired. Oh, our whole coaching staff getting fired.
Yeah, Russ.
But no big deal.
Yeah.
Really, if it's just a blip on my radar screen, I didn't have anything to do with it.
Russ's is facts.
Russ's blip, sorry, dude, your blip left a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Okay? Hurricane Russ left a lot of damage. Right. It was not a mere blip. Maybe for you, not for all of us.
1, 2, 3. Fourth down.
College hoops. CU, CSU. In the field of 68. But not yet officially in the field of 64.
Did hockey come up with? Did hockey come up with?
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay. How much extra money are we making playing the play-in games? Well,
they're making some. People will be. You'll be watching, right?
No.
You're not going to be watching.
Yeah, I will.
CSU tomorrow and CU on Wednesday. I will. Can't wait. Yeah.
It just is. Are you in or are you not in? Like, okay. Yeah.
Is that it, Mark? Is that any different than, hey, the NFL playoffs were just fine, but then we added an extra wild card team? Doesn't seem to have hurt NFL. Baseball playoffs seem to be fine. Let's add an extra wild card team. And those wild card teams are going to and winning World Series. So,
okay, well, let's just make
this is the kind of the NCAA tournament equivalent.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, because you tout it as the final 64, right? But now there's 68 teams. If you want to make it a 68-team tournament, let's just make it a 68-team tournament.
It is a 68-team tournament.
Okay, then why do we?
But no. Four of these games are play-in games.
Yeah, it's like the NBA play-in stuff. You want to extend it? Just extend it.
So you think the play-in tournament in the NBA is a joke?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen, I applaud you for your consistency, but I think what you're seeing is sports recognize the value of sports, TV, the money that can be made, and are looking for every opportunity to put more games on TV. It's good for the business of their sports. It gives fans a chance to...
Well, let's make it 72.
Be
then.
Part of it. If there was no play-in tournament, CU and CSU would be out. They would not be in the field of 64. No. They would not be in the tournament.
Okay, well then put more emphasis on your regular season then.
Well, they do. They play 30 plus games. They play for four months.
Win more of them.
Ah, I see. Coming up, Ryan Rucco
Yeah, Rucco.
Ryan Rucco, who called the Nuggets-Mavs game for ABC yesterday, along with Richard Jefferson. He's going to join us to give his courtside observations of the Nuggets game yesterday. He'll join us next.
Ever since we got Xfinity, we have Wi-Fi all over the house, even in my hiding spots.
Ha! Found ya.
How?
That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. Now through March 21st, get started with 200 megabit internet for $25 a month for 2 years with no annual contract and get Wi-Fi equipment included. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing, auto-pay with stored bank account. Restrictions apply. Taxes and fees extra. After promo, regular rates apply to internet service and Wi-Fi equipment. Actual speeds vary.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Exciting game in Dallas yesterday as the Nuggets, trailing by as many as 13 points midway through the fourth quarter, roared back as we've become accustomed to them doing. Actually took the lead in the final 30 seconds of the game, but a big Luka Doncic three to tie it. Jamal Murray misses a pull-up jumper to put him ahead, and then Kyrie Irving, despite looking like he may have stepped out of bounds when he first got the ball, but no call, ends up hitting a running left-handed hook through the lane. Nuggets lose 107-105. The game was on ABC nationally. Ryan Rucco had the call along with Richard Jefferson, and Ryan joins us now in FOS. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, how are you?
Well, we're doing good, man. Great to hear your voice. Great job on the game yesterday. You know, we here in Denver feel slighted at times because I don't think, or we don't think that the Nuggets get enough coverage. They don't get enough of the national attention. Just your takeaway of this Denver Nuggets team that's trying to repeat as a champion.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great to talk with you, Mark. I've missed you, man. I always love working with you, and it's great to chat with you. I feel like, honestly, watching them through the, you know, the last few weeks, it's been a great reminder of just how cohesive and excellent they are, how their pieces all fit. For anyone who was wondering about that or had forgotten about that, but then also how they now have that championship steal, if you will, where, hey, they've had a good season all throughout, but then they know it's time to flip the switch a little bit, you know, with a little bit more force, and they're able to do it. And that's what we've seen since the All-Star break, right? They're having a good year. They still look like a really good team. Nobody was doubting anything. And then they're like, you know what? We want this one seed. Boom. We're going to turn it on. And suddenly, you know, look like the world beaters that we know that they are. So, I mean, I think they're so wonderful. And the thing that's so great about them, which we saw obviously in the playoffs last year, is how good they are in those clutch time situations. Yes, ultimately they lose that game yesterday, but, you know, they go on a 20-4 run before they do, right? And if, you know, if Aaron Gordon isn't slightly late to get out to Luka Doncic, and if Jamal Murray doesn't shoot a little early, we're talking about yet another ridiculous fourth quarter performance from the Nuggets, with the Murray-Jokic two-man game being at the core of the success. So I just think when it comes to the playoffs, as long as their starting five is healthy, they are absolutely going to be the favorites to come out of the West. And it's hard to... It's hard to see anyone beating them four times in seven games in the West if they're completely healthy. The only issue is the bench, right? And do you get enough from the bench to be able to give Jokic the requisite rest he needs to navigate through the playoffs?
Ryan Rucco, who had a call on ABC with Richard Jefferson, joining us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. I'm glad to hear you saying really nice things. You're impressed by the Nuggets, because at times here in Denver, we get the perception that whether it's the ABC or ESPN, ABC, ESPN crew, doesn't always seem anxious to talk about the Nuggets. Would rather talk about some of the bigger market teams. Do you feel the Nuggets are a national draw?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, I push back on it being our game crews, because I think the difference is, it's there's sort of a delineation, which a lot of people don't make but does exist, right, between who's hosting daily talk shows and then who's covering the games, right? And so for most of us covering the games, you know, we're obsessed with basketball. We love watching the Nuggets because they play truly beautiful basketball. I remember one game last year that I had in Minnesota in the first round of the playoffs with J.J. Redick, and we were just sitting there courtside, and literally at the timeouts, we were taking our headsets off and looking at each other and going, oh my gosh, Jokic is just so ridiculous. Like he's one, and you guys know because you see him all the time. He's one of those guys, like when you watch him and you watch him courtside, you just like, it's just his command of the game is just silly, the things that he can do. I understand why, you know, why the Denver would feel that way, why Nuggets fans would feel that way, because the reality is, you know, we do as a network, when it comes to, you know, all of our talk show programming and our shoulder programming, we spend so much time on the Lakers, so much time on the Warriors, and, you know, and probably, you know, not enough time on some of the more excellent basketball teams that maybe don't have the same sort of crossover stars. Obviously, with Denver, some of that is by design because Nikola Jokic doesn't want to be out there in the same ways that others are. But I thought Richard Jefferson made a great point yesterday on giving Jokic credit for being an ambassador to the game in the sense of how he gives back to younger players. And you know, we kind of saw it the other night, right? In mid-game, he pulls Wemby aside and he says, hey, don't do this on defense, which he may regret telling him in a year. But, you know, that's the way he's still an ambassador for the game. So, you know, I think, you know, the Nuggets probably still don't get talked about enough. You're right. I think some of that is just a product of, like, sports talk culture and the way, you know, stars who we see so often off the floor kind of grab attention. But when it comes to basketball players, there is no doubt the best player in the world is Nikola Jokic. And the Nuggets have a legitimate shot at repeating here.
Hey, and one of the things that's interesting, and you're 100% right about calling games. Like, I go to call a game, I don't care who wins. I just want a good game, right? I just want to watch a great game. So, but here in Denver, there is a contingent of folks that feel like Michael Malone is not a great coach. Like, Michael Malone, you know, just throws his guys out there and you know, and he's just fortunate that he's got, you know, the NBA's best player in Nikola Jokic. Well, what's your guys' perspective who call games? What's your perspective from a national perspective on the job that Michael Malone does as a coach?
I think he's a great coach. And, you know, I think that if you look at just the Nuggets during his time here, right? Like, can you really point to any season in which they've underachieved? I don't think you can, because their early exits from the playoffs were when they were totally, you know, besieged by injury. So even still, you know, there were moments where they performed better than expected. So I look at the job he's done, and I also think you have to look at players and, like, okay, are they at their best here, or were they at their best other places? Well, Michael Porter Jr., has he gotten better and better? He has, right? Is he an A1 star? No. But getting him to buy into the role he has on this team, getting him to rebound consistently, getting him to commit to the defense of them better, Michael Malone's done all that while he also, obviously, Porter is a knockdown shooter. Jamal Murray, you know, think about the way he's continued to grow, get better and better. He's one of the best postseason guards that we've seen over the last decade when you look at his numbers and we think about his clutch performances, which, to go back to that sort of national point, I think Jamal Murray gets slept on way too much. I really think he deserves way more credit than he gets. That man is a sorcerer late in games and can really hit any shot. But then also the other guys, right? Think about Aaron Gordon. How much better he's been in his Denver career than with Orlando, how much different his game is. Think about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You know, he's even just become a way more vocal guy. He's a huge voice in the huddle. That's something that we didn't see elsewhere. And then Michael Malone kind of balancing having this incredibly intact veteran starting five with a young bench that needs to be productive because of the place this franchise is in, but also needs to develop. And I think you feel good about that. So I don't know. I mean, I personally feel like you couldn't ask for more than what you've gotten from Michael Malone. And also, I'm always impressed with his details and his information and his steel when we meet with him as well. So I understand, especially when a coach has been somewhere for a while, fan bases can get a little angsty. But I think you got a really good one in Michael Malone.
All right, Ryan, man, always great to talk to you, buddy. It's been too long. I'll talk to you soon, and all the best to you. Great job yesterday.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it. All the best.
All right, Ryan Rucco, from the game yesterday, calling the game for ABC along with Richard Jefferson. He joins us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Coming up next, we've got what's trending straight ahead.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with what's trending right now.
Avalanche continue to play good hockey since the trade deadline, as they have now won three in a row out on the road. The latest, the 3-2 overtime win over Edmonton. And Jared Bednar feeling good about this team.
It's a different group for us now. Like, right, we've added all these players, and we have a little bit different personality. Guys are re-energized after the trade deadline. New guys coming in, and we're still sort of finding, you know, how the pieces all fit together.
You can sense the energy. You can sense it with the way Bednar's talking, the way Nathan MacKinnon is talking. But you have to look at the way that the players are fitting in. Like, for example, the only way you were going to be able to really trade Bo Byram to get Casey Mittelstadt was if you were able going to be able to go out and make a separate deal to be able to replace Byram. Not maybe feel like you were replacing him one for one, but at least something in the same neighborhood. So the Sean Walker deal, which not only do you unload Ryan Johansson's contract in the process, but you were able to bring back a player who stylistically fits in exactly with the way that your defensemen play, and allowed you to move Bo Byram out. And then you see the benefits of it on Saturday night with Sean Walker scoring two regulation goals.
Let me ask you, how much from a psychological standpoint, because I know Bo Byram, like, Kale McCarr said, hey, man, he's going to be my best friend for the rest of my life type of thing, you know? So how much does it matter that you do replace him with somebody that stylistically is close, and that there's a replacement, that you have an answer for moving off of Bo Byram? Because you know that sometimes it can be a little bit shaky when you get rid of a guy that they really like. So how important was that aspect?
I guess I would flip the question back at you, because how long are you in a professional league before you realize, whoa, this is a business? Five minutes?
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
And so I think the locker room, these guys have been around long enough to understand it is a business, and the moves that were made to make this team better. And it was an acknowledgement that management heard the players, heard Jared Bednar. We were talking about this, 3 days before the trade deadline, that Jared Bednar was flipping his lines around.
Right.
And we all correctly surmised that, hey, this is a plea. This is a message to the front office. We need help.
Right.
And the front office heard. They went out. They made the deals. They made the moves. And clearly, the team, the coaching staff, they're thankful for it. They're energized by it. And they're playing good hockey right now. Some of their best hockey of the year. So the Nuggets lost yesterday. But on Friday, they went down to Austin, Texas, and played San Antonio there. Beat the Spurs. Greg Popovich, crusty, cantankerous, grumpy Greg Popovich, was asked if he's shown his up-and-coming big man, Victor Wembanyama, the windsock, any tape of Nikola Jokic.
I don't think anybody can do what Nikola does. I haven't shown him any Nikola tape. He's a one-off, amazing, fantastic phenomenon.
Wow, that is some over-the-top. Wow, Pop just gushing. Actually, that's what passes for gushing with
How about
Pop
that?
These days? Pop, you got to call him Pop. God.
Dude.
Did I learn that?
You know what's always funny? I had this conversation. I can't remember who I was talking to, but it was a GM, or either a head coach or a GM, but he was like, you know, all these combine kind of meetings, and you know, you get one-on-one with guys. So I like to ask guys who they compare to that play in the NFL. Like, I like to ask guys who they resemble or who they look at in that that becomes part of, you know, who they emulate from a game standpoint. And so he goes, and I like to listen to the answers because some guys are realistic about their skill set and they'll bring out a realistic comparison. And he goes, and then some guys are like, they'll give you the greatest receiver that's ever played the game. Like I like to think of myself as Jerry Rice. You know, I'm a very similar skill set. And you're like, dude, you live in fantasy land and you get a good sense of what a guy actually is. And I love that about Pop. Like, why would I show him that film? Like, he's one of one. He's the only guy in the world. Wembanyama doesn't have that kind of body. The Winsock doesn't have that kind of body. He's never going to be able to play that post-up game, beat people up inside and just move his, you know, move people around. That's not him.
Wow. Rusties, Russell Wilson supporters, you're going to love this. Because Russell Wilson's horrendous first year here in Denver, apparently there was an excuse.
You know, in life, you know, a lot of times that when things don't go your way, you can look at it as disappointing, you can look at it as growth moments. And so for me, you know, my first year I had, you know, my lat, I was playing on it, pushing through it. You know, should I have done that? Well, you know, you compete every day. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And I think that everything didn't go our way the first year, this past year, I felt like myself again. You know, so I can't wait to just put on the cleats and go after it.
So he had a lat injury, which we knew about, but apparently it was the reason why he had such a crappy year.
Okay.
Do you accept that?
Do I accept that he had a lat injury? Yes.
No, do you accept that that was the reason why and that we shouldn't look at his first year in Denver the way that we have looked at it to this point? That there was a valid excuse for why he played so poorly his first year.
What's my rule about playing with injury?
Are you out there playing? Then you're healthy enough.
My rule is you've got to play hurt and you got to play injured, but you have to play well hurt and injured. I don't want it.
By the way, is it just me or when he was talking about lat, did all I hear was fat? Because he looked kind of fat his first year.
I had this fat injury.
Come on. Russell Wilson first year versus Russell Wilson last year. Big difference. Big difference. Come on.
Yeah, there was a big
difference. But all right, so this is the way it's being spun in the Russell camp.
Yeah,
that his first year, paying no attention to 60% completion, 3,500 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions, and 55 sacks, a career high, by the way. It was all based on a lat injury.
Right.
Playing 15 games, by the way. Okay. All right.
Yeah, so now we're
making excuses. Okay. Fair enough. Rusty's will lap that up. Yep. That'll do it for What Is a Trending. Bring that to you each and every morning at 7:30. Then again, coming up at 9:30. Lot to react to from the weekend that was. We'll open up the RamosLaw.com text line to you. 303-713-1043. More highlights from Russ's press conference, including the opener, which Mark absolutely predicted and nailed. That's next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Busy, busy sports weekend. So much happening. A lot to react to. Got the tournament. Got CU, CSU playing in the play-in games. By the way, if CSU wins over Virginia, which I believe they will, they would get Texas in the first round. Okay, Mark's rolling his eyes.
All right.
So they would get Texas. Both Virginia and Texas, those are beatable teams. I know they carry the big names and the big conferences, everything like that, but if you've been following their seasons, Virginia's having a down year by Virginia standards, and Texas is all up and down. So CSU could absolutely win both those games and get to the second round. CU has Boise State. Boise State's that's just a tough blue-collar team. You're going to have to play 40 minutes to beat them, but CU should beat them. They're the more talented team. And then if you beat them, then you get Florida. And Florida lost one of their key big men to an injury, so they're beatable. So, yeah.
Boise State is an interesting, Boise's a great town. I don't know if you ever spent any time in Boise. Boise's a beautiful town.
It's 8 o'clock in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah.
Leonard Skinner.
Right.
Right. Anyway, all right.
No.
Thought that would make more of an impact.
Yeah, it didn't. It was probably my hatred for Boise, but Boise is a great town. And
notice they didn't say it's 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock in Moscow, Idaho. They didn't do that, did they? And you're just bitter.
No. Well, Boise is where you stopped because it was the only, it was the only place with any population. But what I was getting to with Boise is the reason that Boise has gotten to the point where it's gotten to is because, you got a pulse, you can get into Boise. So all the kids that can't get into the Pac-12 and Pac-10 schools back in the days, the kids that can't get into Cal and Stanford and UCLA and, USC, and they can go to Boise because anybody can get into Boise.
So if that's the case, what's Idaho?
Idaho's Harvard in the Northwest. I mean,
they lose key recruiting battles with Stanford, is what you're saying. They lose and win some.
Right.
Win and lose some.
It's like, hey, do I want to go to Idaho? Or it's the education identical to Stanford. So it's got the same kind of feel.
So it's that time of year again. Everyone's getting ready to fill out their brackets. The good news is for you, if you have a chance to win $5,000, if you have that winning bracket, maybe you have CU and CSU moving on to the second round.
CU women's are a 5 seed.
They're a 5 seed. They'll be taking on
5-12.
5-12. Hate those 5-12 matchups. Head to denversports.com/hoops to sign up for our Sport Clips 5K Bracket Challenge. And you got to get your picks in before the first game Thursday morning. So the play-in games, while you could pick CU and CSU to win, of course, those games don't officially count in everybody's brackets.
The fake games don't count in your bracket.
If they're not officially part of the bracket,
Right.
Nobody I know counts the play-in games as part of the overall score for their brackets. It starts on Thursday.
Yes.
So that does kind of make, what exactly are these play-in games? I get it.
68, why not 72?
I have a feeling we're going to see an expansion of the... they're already talking about taking the college football playoff, which hasn't even expanded to 12 yet.
Right.
And they're already talking about expanding it to...
16?
16.
That's what they do in 1AA football.
I'm fine with that.
16.
I'm fine with that.
It's a real
if you look at how competitive college basketball was this season and some of the teams that got in versus some of the teams that were left out, you can make the case that you should add more teams to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, let's just add them all.
Well, there's like 321 teams that play Division I college basketball. So if you actually think about it, just having 68 teams out of 321, you probably should expand the field. Right.
March Madness would end in June.
Some more on the RamosLaw.com text line. Evans, you're misleading. Russ didn't say he had a bad season just because of his lat. Well, no, but come on. It was clearly insinuated. When you were asked what went wrong in Denver, and you go out of your way, unsolicited, unprompted, to mention a lat injury that you had. Come on. What are you implying there? What are you implying? Come on. You're implying that it played a major role in the way you played. Otherwise, why bring it up?
Because when you're in toxic positivity mode, you've got to make sure that you've got an excuse.
No excuses, no explanations.
I guess that doing high knees on the plane didn't help your lat. It's a shame. What do you do on the plane for your lat? Like you open up one of the storage bins and do pull-ups? Getting strong now. And the thing about him is he can hang. He's so short he can hang from the storage bin and his feet not touch the ground. He's got to jump up to get to it.
Ouch. By the way, I laughed. Oh my God, I was laughing. You nailed it.
Oh.
So you said you predicted his first press conference in Pittsburgh, right? Mm-hmm. and you did the whole Russ voice and how he would start naming all the old Steelers.
Yeah.
He didn't mention any of the old Steelers, but it literally was within the first minute of his press conference. He just started going on, oh, I ran into Cam Hayward. Oh, man, such a great guy. Former Walter Payton Award winner. And then, oh, I saw Minka Fitzpatrick, and great guy. And then T.J. Watt. Man, T.J. Watt should be a multi-defensive player of the year. And
I should have focused more on the current guys that were in the locker room on mine. That's what I should have done. But
you got the point.
You got the point.
I give Russ credit. He should go into politics when it's all said and done, because I've never seen an athlete stay on message as well as he does. I'm honestly in awe of it. I really am. Because what I heard from his press conference changed some of the names and everything like that, but if you just closed your eyes and just listened to it, it was exactly like Denver Bronco press conference. But
that's exactly what his problem is, and why so many guys that he's played with over the years have an issue with him, because there's nothing real.
All right, so for example, because I give the Pittsburgh media credit, they tried, just like the Denver media tried sometimes, but the Pittsburgh media definitely went out. What was the story about Russ that you want to know? Did you come here expecting to be the starter? Do you feel like you have to compete for the job? Remember, this was before Kenny Pickett was traded and they acquired Justin Fields. They had the press conference.
Right.
But these are all direct questions asked. Hey, you know, what is your role? Do you expect to start? So here's the first one.
I come in the mindset of just being the best version of me every day. You know, I think that's always the plan. What we're trying to do is, you know, for me, you know, I want to help our football team win. I think that's the job of the quarterback, you know, role is to help the Pittsburgh Steelers win. And that's always been the goal every day. And so, you know, the goal is to, you know, get more trophies and to do everything we can to win.
Okay, great answer, Russ. All right. But no, do you expect to be the starter? Have you been given any assurances?
Every day you wake up, you look forward to, you know, helping the team win. I think that's just honestly my focus right now. You know, I've been fortunate to, you know, be in this league for a long time and have had, you know, a lot of success and done some cool things, but there's more to do. And that's where my head's at.
Okay. I got you, Russ. But now I need to know, do you come here expecting to have the job or compete for the job?
I look forward to the competition, being the best version of myself, most importantly, first. I think you always try to be the best version of you and competing with yourself every day. I know the standard, what it looks like. I know what that looks like internally, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. So that's the number one thing. I think the second of all is that you always want to make the room better. You know, that's the second most important thing. And then with making the room better, you make the team better, which what we're really competing for is the adding one more in there, that trophy case over there. So that's what we're trying to do together as a team.
Brilliant. Can't pin him down. He's gelatinous.
Yeah, he's
amoeba man.
Yeah, he's not gonna answer a question.
He doesn't answer it.
He flat won't answer it.
Yeah.
And you know, like whatever. But again, I would love, instead of home my lat and this, that, and the other, and you know, it's a blip on the radar screen, whatever. I'd love to just say, man, I sucked. I was really bad. And I know that goes against, you know, I know that goes against his, you know, whatever psychobabble crap he follows, but
psychobabble crap?
Yes. I know that goes
against. Is that a Mark Schlereth term for toxic positivity?
Yes.
Psychobabble crap.
Psychobabble crap he follows, but dude, I want, like everybody else, I want some honest, I just want you to be real. Hey man, we all got issues. We all have problems. We all have things that don't work out.
And just maybe an acknowledgement of, hey, I'm not expecting him to fall on his sword and take all the blame for what happened here. And he shouldn't.
No.
He doesn't need to. But boy, it'd be nice to come out and say, hey, you know what? I'm really looking forward to this. Last 2 years weren't to my standard. To my standard. We didn't win enough football games there. I take a lot of responsibility for that. I look to be better here in Pittsburgh. Just some kind of nod. Just some kind of acknowledgement to Broncos country that, yeah, it wasn't good. I wasn't good. I wasn't good enough, instead of all this toxic positivity BS.
What did he end the press? Did he end like his new potential let's ride phrase? He ended, some way he ended. I saw Mace put something out there. Forget what he said.
I may miss that one.
Yeah.
It'll surface, don't worry. Because
yeah, I mean, he might have just like dipped his toes in the water.
Probably
just like,
experimenting a little bit.
Let me see how this goes.
Another one on the RamosLaw.com text line. Jamal Murray needs to stop being a ball hog sometimes. He needs to know when to pass the ball. Wow. See, this is what I love about sports fans.
Uh-huh.
Right? You know, when things are going well, Aaron Gordon is a selfless, multi-dimensional, do whatever's necessary, takes on the team's toughest score every single night, no complaint, and is one of the best in the business when they win. When they lose, why didn't Michael Malone double Luka out top? Why did he leave Aaron Gordon on him alone? Okay.
Right.
And then Jamal Murray, who just hits clutch shot after clutch shot, misses one, and is now a ball hog.
Right.
By the way, just the other day, didn't they win a game in which Jamal made two great assists, drove, kicked back out to KCP for a three at the top? How about that one where he drives to the right in traffic, zips a pass cross court to Michael Porter Jr. in the left-hand corner who knocks down a clinching three?
Yes. By the way.
But when you lose, Jamal's a ball hog.
I tell you what, though. Man, you want to talk about a magician at the glass. How many of those kind of sweeping underhand, you know, kissing it off the top of the glass, getting it to drop in. I just, like, he has made some plays around the hoop, around the rim, that to me have just been absolutely amazing here the last couple of games that I've watched. So I just, like, the dude's a big time player. And yeah, he missed the go ahead shot, should have hit it, probably took it too early.
Yeah, but boy, he was wide open.
Yeah, wide open.
You take that shot 10 out of 10 times.
Right.
He missed that one. Fine. Take that shot again. Eight more times. I'm confident you'll make 80% of them.
Yeah. He was wide open.
Yeah.
And that's a shot that he's constantly hitting.
Yeah. Besides, I don't know. That's the new way of doing things in basketball I don't like, where they literally take the clock down to like 2 seconds, 1 second, with the idea that we're either going to make it or we're going to overtime.
Right.
Or we're going to lose, whatever. There's no idea to, hey, let's put the ball up here with maybe 4 seconds left and, you know, put ourselves in a position to perhaps go get an offensive rebound. Because the problem with that is that you limit your options for what you can do with the ball in that situation, because you play it so far down to the zeros. And then you, a lot of times, end up with a tough shot. You see that hero ball shot that a lot of guys end up taking. In this case, it was actually a good shot. Just missed it. But now he's a ball hog. Okay.
Right. It was a great shot. Like I said, that one he shot with, what, 4 seconds left or something like that?
Yeah.
I would have liked to seen it go down to two, but maybe
he doesn't get that shot.
Yeah, he doesn't get a shot. You're right. It's a great shot. Should have had it, though, right? Should have knocked it down.
Russ lives rent-free in your head. No, he doesn't live rent-free in my head. I think it needs to be brought and talked about over and over again how much damage this guy cost. You know, we casually throw out statements like, oh, this loss is going to set the Broncos or set this team back years, or this move is going to set, you know, fill in the blank team back a long time. This move and his performance, and ultimately you could talk about all you want about who to blame, George Payton and Sean Payton, and ultimately the bulk of the responsibility lands on Russell Wilson. The damage that he did to this franchise is immeasurable. So
I choose to look at
rent-free. Right. No, I'm just making sure we continue to drive home the point. This guy crushed this franchise. Crushed it.
But by the way, like I do, this franchise owes him a debt of gratitude. Yeah, he's, you know, taking 38 more million this year and however many more million next year, and depending on where he ends up and all that kind of stuff, because he signed a 1-year deal. But Mike, he played so poorly, and he was such a, it was such a bad 2 years that finally he created the opportunity to go get a head coach that could honestly assess where this franchise is and blow the whole damn thing up. Because let me just say this, you know, if you're truly Broncos, not if you're not a Rusty, but you're truly a Broncos fan, it's something that you and I have talked about for the last 7-8 years that needed to be done. But no, we just took the, you know, you coined it a couple years ago, the two trains on, you know, parallel tracks. We're trying to fix it with some Band-Aids, but no, doesn't work that way. And to finally have a coach that comes in here and says, you know, somebody within management says, this is not good enough. This is not the standard that's going to be required to win going forward. I'm dumping the whole thing. And I for one, I'm happy about it.